welcome to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry. We're doing this a little ahead of schedule this week because both of us are heading out hunting or scouting.
Yeah, we will both be in the field at the time that you are listening to this.
So. Hopefully by the time this goes to air, I have a deer down.
I really hope
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, you've seen some nice ones, but
yeah,
we'll get this housekeeping, and then we'll get right into some cool stuff.
Yeah, really, all I have for housekeeping this week is I wanted to let everybody listening know the Washoe County Gun Range has reopened. So I guess they found people.
Yeah, certified some new range masters.
Okay.
So I think that was the big issue, was that they did not have coverage with a range master on site.
So, hey, if you got a rifle tag coming up, of course, you've got your new Howa Superlight rifle with you. You want to break it in, zero it, go out to the Washoe County Gun Range. You don't have to rip out into the desert anymore. And honestly, with tags opening now, antelope is open as we record this.
Cow elk is open.
Cow elk and deer starting on the 10th. I'd prefer if you weren't out there shooting. I'd prefer if people were at a range.
Yeah. And don't forget the Howa Superlight. I've got my new 6.5 Grendel.
Have you shot it yet?
I have not.
Okay.
I have not shot it. I am waiting for the scope.
Yeah, as soon as you get that, let's go out and shoot, Dave.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be the wife's gun.
It's funny how that stuff works. Yeah.
Well, I hope she knows that it's going to be her gun because I want my .308 Howa back.
Yeah, understandable.
Yeah.
Hey, let's jump right into it. We wanted to talk about access stuff right off the bat. If you've been out there scouting, you've probably seen it. I experienced it this weekend. Without going into the whole story, man, I feel like we're beating a dead horse at this point, but water everywhere, washouts.
Yes.
I mean, access is tough this year.
It's really tough. I know you've been out numerous times for your deer hunts. I've been out quite a bit with my buddy looking for California bighorns. And I think that is probably our biggest issue is some of the access, some of the roads to get to points to where we can, you know, throw the backpack on and hike in. A lot of these roads are just a mess,
Yes. Yeah. We had to, my dad and I went in. And part of this access segment, we can talk a little bit about stuff you should have to be prepared. We had to use the winch on his quad, you know, going up.
He's got a Razor, right?
No, he's got a Honda. I think it's a Pioneer. It's more like Ranch.
Okay, yeah.
Well, we weren't on that. We were on just a quad.
A quad, okay.
Because we knew everybody had warned us this canyon we're going into, it's super rough. So we thought, okay, let's take a smaller, more nimble vehicle.
Yeah.
And despite the fact that we have done the ATV safety stuff on the show before.
Right.
Not admitting to anything, but we may have stuck two dudes on a single ATV.
Well, you know,
you do what you
how
gotta
many
do.
Of us have done that?
It's
you know, if you're safe about it, I don't see it being too horrible of an issue. But you know,
it's a bigger machine too. Yeah. It's not one of the little tiny
the little 300s or something.
Right,
but still,
right.
you said you had to use a winch to get yourself through a couple nasty sections.
The washouts were terrible. Sinking the thing up to the axles in the mud, and it was like run the winch out to a thicker clump of sage. Winch and give it a little gas and then move it to the next clump of sage. And we had to do that for a good, probably, a 50, 60 yard stretch of the road we were, quote unquote.
Well, and then
road.
You got to figure you got to come back out.
Yeah.
So, myself, same issue there. We've come across a lot of areas where there's just even winching you weren't going to get across because the road's, two thirds of the road is completely washed out and it's 2.5-3 feet deep.
Yeah.
And so there's just no way of getting by. So you have to, we probably spent 3 days of scouting just trying to get around to work our way into a location, which we still have not got to in the many trips we've taken out looking for sheep, to get around to this one mountain range that we're trying to get to. I know a lot of you are like, then just get off the dang machine and just hike on in. Well, where we are at and where we need to get to, where we're getting to these points where we're hitting these washouts that are not crossable, like safely at all, we're still 12 miles.
Yeah.
And we're still 12 miles from the point where we want to get to, where we would then get off the ATVs and hike in another roughly a mile and a half, 2 miles to get into our actual spot.
Gotcha. You know, you may not know the answer to this. I'm going to ask the question anyway. What's the official kind of yes or no on if you can get around a washout? Let's say the trail is damaged beyond repair, but you can jig jog like 25 yards around it and hop back on the trail. Can you take your machine off trail and almost, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, yeah. Well, you're not supposed to, but people okay. are going to do it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, in a 3-4 foot deep washout, it yeah. seems like that would, it's beyond repair.
Right, and any chance of repair by, you know, whoever may be maintaining it, if it's a BLM road that they need to maintain or whatever, it could be years before they get right. to that, because I'm sure they have a list that's pages long of people saying, hey, this is washed out. Hey, this is washed out. Technically, you're not supposed to.
Okay.
As hunters and outdoors people that we are, everywhere we go, we see that. You know, yeah. You'll see an yeah. area that is just tore up and somebody has made a new trail through the sagebrush or through the mahoganies, and now they've cut some branches and stuff, and they've created their own trail to get around the damaged area.
Right.
So it's kind of like, you know, you hate to see it happen, but then what's your alternative? I mean, that damaged area will probably now, hopefully, you know, reseed through natural right. processes, and bushes and stuff will come back where the washout was. So you're just trading one for the other over time. That becomes a very difficult scenario or acceptance when you're talking wilderness. There's a lot of areas in the state that have a lot of wilderness, and the road you're on to get from point A to point B is the only non-wilderness area.
Oh, the actual,
you know what I mean?
Road
the
itself.
Actual road.
Right, right. Okay.
To say, to get into some of these like trailheads and such.
Mm-hmm.
So if you leave that road, you are in wilderness. That
gotcha.
Is a major no-no. There's no like, oh, it's cool. You just went 25 feet into wilderness with your machine. That one will get you in trouble. If it comes up. That's the one caveat where it's not okay to go around. And those are probably priority areas where the Forest Service or BLM or whoever is maintaining some of those wilderness roads, in a
right.
sense. Those will obviously become priority roads to address.
Okay. It seems like at this point it'd almost be overwhelming. I mean, how are they going to maintain all the stuff that there are so many bad roads out
yeah.
in the mountains right now?
Oh, yeah.
And that's, yeah. I'm not complaining too much because it does. The one thing I'm liking so far about this season is the area I've really been focusing on, the area that you told me you saw a couple good deer in and where I found a good deer. You know, I have not seen people.
Yeah,
so
it's 'cause of the roads, I'm sure.
Right. That's the nice thing is, you know, it's kind of a barrier to entry where people aren't going past some of these washouts. But I did wonder about that. The spot that we had to use the winch in, there was no way around it. It was a sheer cliff on one side and a swamp spring bog on the other. So it was
so
like,
you had to.
You got to stay on the road.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I wonder about that because I've seen the natural evolution of some of these roads over time, or I keep using the word roads. I mean, OHV trails
yeah.
over time, where I notice, you know, it just kind of becomes the new established norm to cut out and around or something.
Right. And it really is. You go about anywhere in the state and you'll see them.
The wilderness thing you brought up was interesting. For some reason, I had wilderness as like, as soon as you cross into it, no motorized vehicles, period.
Once you go into it, yeah, but there are some places in the state where you may have a wilderness. Left-hand side is wilderness, right-hand side is wilderness, and then the access road to, say, get to a trailhead, that is an OHV road.
You bring up a couple good points. Let's get into those next segment. Don't go anywhere. Coming up, we'll talk a little bit about communication, a little bit about having a plan before you head out.
Yeah, and safety with your machines.
Safety with machines, too. It's all on Nevada Backcountry, 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, welcome back. Thanks for staying tuned through the break. First, let me give a quick shout out to Out West Buildings. Look, right now, my house is an absolute disaster. I've got stuff laid out for my hunt. I've got all my optics laid out that I've been scouting with. I'm quickly running out of space. Go to Out West Buildings, check out some of their options for storage stuff. I know personally my wife would absolutely love if I had just a dedicated shed for all my hunting gear, because I am quickly running out of bedrooms to lay stuff out in. So go check them out, Out West Buildings in Fallon. Now, jumping right back in where we left off, we were talking a little bit about access issues, safety on machines. Over the break, you were telling me about some of the frustrations you guys are having out there, kind of dodging wilderness areas.
Yeah, where we are, we're kind of trying to dodge wilderness areas because, like you were stating before, like maybe just kind of skirting around it and kind of crushing through the sagebrush to get around the damaged area. We don't have that option because we have wilderness on both sides of us. So that's not an option. Plus, a lot of where these washouts are pretty steep, narrow canyons, so there's not a lot of space to jog around the damaged area.
Right.
Because it's just as rocky and shaley, and just the angles are not conducive.
Okay.
So we're starting to get into this point where, you know, we're, I don't know, this is fourth, fifth time we've been out weekend, and frustration's kicking in. So,
yeah.
But you know, the one thing I want to tell folks is don't let that frustration force you to make a decision that is going to cost you money, time, and hopefully not injury. Because there have been three occurrences now that I've talked to through friends that hunt and scout and just the community itself, where folks have decided to go ahead and wing it. Like, let's see what we can do. What could possibly happen type of thing.
Right.
And they try to get past these washouts or damaged roads or, you know, whatever it is, the obstacle that's keeping them from getting to, you know, 50 yards up the road to where it's clearer. And they have rolled their UTVs. There's one instance where I think the UTV is still...
That's what you were saying. Yeah, it's out there.
Stuck in the washout.
Yeah.
Way the heck out in central Nevada somewhere. It's still stuck there. And another one went ass over tea kettle backwards.
Yeah.
They just...
Oh, it just flipped over?
Flipped backwards.
Going too steep.
They just went too steep. And then, you know, you got to know your thresholds. You know, we're
yes,
a bunch of guys,
yeah.
You know, things hanging low. We're the toughest thing in the world. There's nothing stopping us.
Yep.
If you don't know your threshold and you don't know your machine very well or... adequately enough, you're like, dude, I'll just stick it in low and slap the lockers on. We got this. Well, that may have been what they thought, and they got a little too steep, possibly gunned it a little too hard. They came backwards.
Yeah. And believe me, this is not coming from the cheap seats. I have done reckless things.
Oh, yeah.
I've rolled ATVs.
Yeah. I've done some stupid stuff. That's where I think I've learned my threshold.
Bingo. You know? I was going to say, this comes from real world experience of, you know, at the end of the day, no hunt is worth winding up in the hospital or trashing, you know, a $30,000 side-by-side or something.
Yeah.
At a certain point, it may be better just to get off and walk.
If you can,
You
know, or you got to reroute your hunt.
Yeah.
You know, figure it out. Just know a lot of these places in Nevada that most of you have probably been in, if something occurs and you're on the ground and you're hurt, it's going to be a long time before that helicopter shows up.
You know, that's a perfect segue into what we were going to talk about, communication.
Yes.
Bingo. So having a plan, I try not to overload my wife with, okay, these are the grid coordinates, this is that, the other thing, you know. But I do always leave her with, this is where I am going to be. This is where I'm going to set up base camp. This is where I'm going to be hunting. And then the big thing that a lot of people don't do, check-in times.
Yeah.
We have a hard, you know, do not pass go, do not collect $200. If you have not heard from me by this point, not like, oh, I think he's been out there enough, he's probably okay. No, bottom line is, if I don't check in by this point, it's time to let somebody know. What do you use for communication while you're out there?
I have the InReach.
Okay, same here.
I have an InReach, but I do the same thing. I will print out a map, and I will give it to my next-door neighbor, who I've known him since grade school.
Okay.
And then I give another one to the wife.
Yeah.
And same thing as you. I circle where I'm camping, a polygon of the area that I'll most likely be hunting, and again, check-in times, because usually you've already been out in that area, you know where you can and can't get reception.
That's a very good point. Yeah. During scouting, call me whatever you want. Maybe I'm too technology dependent, but I don't put my phone in airplane mode during scouting because I want to feel that, like, okay, it'll vibrate with a text or something.
Yeah.
I want to know where I have service while I'm out there.
Well, yeah. And then I just get on Onyx and I drop a pin right there. I'm like,
exactly.
Okay, this is a spot I can get to and send my wife a text like, I'm doing good. Or the InReach, you know, the InReach messaging something. But, you know, even the best hunters out there, the most experienced hunters out there, like take Tim Burnett, for instance. He's got an episode where he had just backpacked all the way into this mountain, like way the heck back in there. And his satellite phone, the battery was dead or something was wrong with the satellite phone. And, you know, he had an agreement with his wife, like, if I don't check in by these times, something's not right.
Yeah.
He came all the way out the mountain to make sure that he's like, hey, don't get search and rescue out here. But, you know, it's that kind of a thing. It's that kind of connection and communication with people, you know, that are not hunting with. You're the city dwellers at the point in time that you're out there being
Daniel Boone,
Davy Crockett, whoever. It sounds ridiculous because, you know, some folks are like, gosh, I've been hunting for 30 years. No big deal. Well, it's that one time that you do need it, that you're like, I'm...
You know, I go back to that episode we did with the buddy of mine, Dr. McLennan. He was talking about most of the time, if you just think through as you're out there, have, we'll call it like a micro plan in place, if this, then that type scenarios.
Yeah.
And so I always think about those things like, okay, if I were to get bit by a snake or I were to roll an ATV, what would I do? Where would I go for reception? How would I get out of this situation? And I don't think it's morbid. I don't think it's like a negative mindset. It's just being aware of what we're doing out there.
Just being safe.
Yeah. And knowing so that, God forbid, that worst case scenario happens, you know, okay, holy smokes, if I get 300 yards over to this peak, I'll have cell phone reception. I've got a rattler attached to my calf.
Yeah.
I could probably make it 300 yards, get reception, fire up the InReach. If I don't, whatever. But I think people should think through those things because oftentimes it's when you're not thinking about that it does happen. And then I call it death spiraling or just a cascading series of bad decisions. Next thing you know, you're a headline.
Yes, exactly. Well, and it's also a sense of comfort knowing that you have that communication available and it's there. I mean, it doesn't even have to be an accident or a snake bite or rolling your ATV. It could be simple as my ATV's broke.
Like, yes.
It won't start. And I am 32 miles from camp and it's hot as bejesus out and I have one 16-ounce thing of water.
Yeah.
So I should probably let somebody know that things have gone not the way I wanted today, and I may need someone to
come get me.
You know, whatever it might be. I mean,
I told the story.
None of us are bulletproof.
Oh, absolutely.
Dude,
not.
Nothing. Yeah. No, I've rolled down a hill before, hitting the wrong piece of shale, and just did the old tumbled right down the side of the mountain thing, and I was sliced up and bashed up. And
how'd you get out of that?
I limped.
Okay.
Luckily, I fell on the side of the mountain where the truck was.
Okay. So you didn't have too far to go. Yeah.
No, I had a couple hundred yards to go, but I was pretty bashed up.
Yeah. I told the story of on that sheep hunt last year, just shredded the sidewall of a tire and every, you know, those sharp rocks
that
moon dust.
Stuff. Oh, man.
Luckily, we had cell service, and we had run into a game warden earlier, And I,
oh, that's right.
Yeah, I make the joke. It was the only time I've been happy to ride in the back of a game warden's truck, and knock on wood, the only time.
Did you ask me, just to make this like legit, can you cuff me?
Yeah, no, I did not. No, I was not going there, but you know, luckily,
it's not creepy or nothing.
Yeah, we had that. We had that the guy's phone number, and he was good enough to come get us because it was going to be a long, hot walk back to camp.
Yeah.
On that note, cue the music. Let's take a quick break. You mentioned batteries a little while ago.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the power options that we both use while we're out there. When we come back on Nevada Backcountry, stay tuned. Hey, thanks for hanging in there over the break. First, let's kind of wrap up on the communication thing, go into some power options out in the field, and then we'll get into actual camp selection, camp necessities. So right off the rip, Dave, what do you do for power while you are out in the field, whether that's living out of a backpack or, you know, living out of a trailer, whatever? What do you use?
So I've got those for my backpack. I have those little charge packs.
The power bank thing.
The little power banks. They're like, you know, maybe twice the size of a credit card or so. And they can charge my phone like twice, each bank. And I generally carry three of those.
Okay.
I've been looking into the solar ones. I haven't gotten one yet, but one of those like little, about the size of your palm, and it's solar. That'll charge your phone, or you can use that to charge your banks.
I was going to bring up, it's a good idea to have two power banks. And I use the same, it's maybe like the size of a deck of playing cards.
Yeah. It
doesn't
weigh
much. You plug your phone into it, but one is good, two is better. And if you have the little solar attachment, that's one can stay at camp, whatever whether that's a tent or an RV, whatever, that can stay there and charge. And then you have one with you, and then it's a daily rotation. One goes on the solar charger, one comes with you in the backpack.
Yeah, and then I've got, for when I'm backpacking in, I've got a larger, I'm trying to remember the name of it. My wife is going to really have my butt for this because she's the one that got it for me.
Okay.
But anyway, it's about an inch and a half thick.
Okay.
And it's probably the size of a paperback book. And it's a power box. It has a 120 plug-in. It has USB ports. It's got a light. It can jump start your car or your ATV if you need
really?
To.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's very powerful. And they're not very big.
Yeah.
And I'll throw that in my backpack, and I'll use that to charge my phone or something. Or, you know, if I bring something to the in the backpack that I want to plug in or something like that, I can. But it's probably maybe a pound and a quarter.
Okay.
Is all
so
it
not
is.
Much.
No, not at all. And if like the solar, like that's what I've been using since I don't acquired the solar pad yet.
Right.
I just use that, and I can use that to charge the phone in the evenings. I just plug it in, and that thing, I think it says something I could charge a standard iPhone 72 times.
Okay.
It's a pretty powerful little box.
And all this, even if you're not, let's say you're a topographical map and compass and protractor guy and all this newfangled technology you don't want, it goes back to the safety communication thing.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, if you don't use Onyx, whatever, you don't use your phone for mapping or pictures while you're out there, any of that. Having a power bank, having like a Garmin inReach like we use, it's a safety thing.
And those are all rechargeable. You can same with like headlamps. They make the headlamps now. They just plug them into a USB and they charge. And so, I mean,
I'm slowly going that way with my stuff. I've still got a battery, like a AAA battery headlamp.
Right. Then you got to carry all the batteries.
Bingo.
And then you're like, oh, wait a second. These are AAAs. Wait, the GPS is AAs. Okay, wait a second. I need Cs for the flashlight. Now they've got everything so rechargeable. That's why it's nice having those little power banks.
Yes.
And it's a lot lighter, a lot more user friendly, and you're not having to fish for you know, good batteries.
Well, and good batteries is the key point there. The thing I like about the power bank I use, you can press this little button on it, and it shows you, it's got little LED light ups. So I know, hey, this is at 100% or this is at 50%, versus I've been there before. I grab a Ziploc of batteries out of the drawer at home. I get out there and I go, oh, this, what the hell? This doesn't work. And I realize I've grabbed bad batteries. This with the power bank, you can see right away, okay, I've got 100% charge or I've got 50% charge. I know whether or not it's good. There's a visible reference.
I agree with you there. So definitely invest in a nice power bank system.
Yeah, you know? Safety. And believe me, this isn't a, I'm not a big worrier. I don't get, you know, wrapped up over stuff. But look, I've talked about them on the show before. I've got four kids. I've got a wife. They all depend on me, depend on my income. So for me, it's just a simple peace of mind thing. My wife is good enough to let me go out and do this stuff. I might as well extend that courtesy as far as, hey, I'm going to check in with you while I am out there.
Oh, yeah. Well, for me, it does give me comfort when I can send out a message to her and she sends something back like, hey, got it.
You've got a co-host that depends on you.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, and it's also nice knowing, okay, all right, they know where I am. Because like with the InReach, when you send a I'm okay button,
it tags it with your location.
It tags it, and it gives you the location. It gives you UTMs of where you just sent that message.
Right.
So that's your latest point.
And I would point to, who was the guy, gosh, I'm going to draw a blank now, but he was friends with the Hilton family and everything. He was the pilot. He crashed
He crashed in his experimental plane, and they found him like 2 years later on Mount Grant or something like that.
Yeah, well, I thought it was longer than 2 years. I thought he was gone for a long time. Yeah,
Yeah, Steve, gosh, you're right. I do remember that. And it was a hunter found his wallet.
Okay, found the wreckage.
The wreckage, and then he was still in the pilot's seat. Well, so, what was left of him.
Yeah, and that's my point with that story is, I take for granted sometimes, I know a lot of people out there listening, you probably do too. I just kind of take for granted that we live in this big, expansive, desolate state where there's not a lot out there for infrastructure. And I kind of think, well, I know my wife's made the joke before. I can't remember what I ate for breakfast, but I can take you right to a rock in the middle of nowhere where I sat and glassed up an animal.
Yeah.
I take that for granted. The bottom line is, if they don't know where to start looking, it is going to be an uphill battle to find you or find, God forbid, your remains out there.
Yeah.
So
I know we're sounding so
terrible
end of
episode.
The world thing, man. People got to start tuning out like, oh, these guys are jerks.
This is all death and destruction. God, death and it's a safety thing. So enough on that.
We're just worried about everyone else out there hunting. We want to make sure everyone has a fun, enjoyable experience, you know, harvesting their animal and having 100%. A good time out there. Get home, enjoy the meat you just harvested. We do not want to read about you in the local newspaper. Or, well, newspaper, that's funny.
Hear about you on 99.1 on the news.
Exactly, on the news.
Let's get on to a more fun topic. We'll talk a little bit about camp selection and necessities to have at camp while you're out there.
Yeah.
Some people are already out there for antelope. Deer's coming up. Cow elk is going on now.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk a little bit about selecting a base camp site. Yeah. Couple do's and don'ts. Personal experience. If you've got a hammer and tent stakes, you better have scouted where you're going to set that thing up.
Oh, yeah.
Because some of these areas out there, it's a ton of rock. You're not going to hammer anything in. And newsflash, Nevada's a windy state. Your tent will be two counties over if it's not hammered in well. Yeah. So as part of the whole scouting process while people are out there, I look for a couple things. I look for shade, first and foremost, especially early season. I look for good ground, and by that I mean not a granite ledge, something you can hammer your tent in. And I look for water. Water nearby, preferably flowing, even if it's not something you're going to drink out of or filter out of. Every now and then, just washing my hands is a nice concept while I'm out there for 3-4 days.
Yeah, I've got to divulge something in relation to that. With my age, which I'm still a young pup, in my opinion, at least my brain tells me I am, I have acquired, due to an older friend of mine who brought one out last year, year before last on a hunt. It's a shower tent with a, it's called the Boss, is a propane, it heats up water.
Okay.
And you can take showers and just fill up a 5-gallon bucket and take a shower. I've spent hundreds of days in wall tents smelling like
death.
You know what, after 10 or 12 days of a hunt, but that's where I've gone now. I mean, if that doesn't fit in the truck, I'm getting a bigger truck.
Oh, hey, I'll go there with you. I don't have the propane, but I've got the solar bag.
Yeah. Oh, you got the,
solar bag.
Have you ever had one of those where you've left it out too long and you go to take a shower and it's like, hot. It's like lava.
Yep. On an elk hunt. Left it. I thought like, this is perfect.
Left it on the hood of a truck.
No, I left it hanging in the tree.
Oh, jeez.
It was like on the south-facing side of the tree. Yeah, I went to take a shower. It's too hot.
Oh, yeah. I made tea with mine. It was so freaking hot.
Yeah. So,
I mean, there's a lot of cool things. And then one thing I always bring is a rake. Throw it in the truck.
Very smart.
To rake the ground from the rocks or the bushes or what have you. And then I always carry loppers. I've always got loppers and a saw in my UTV or the ATV, whichever one I'm taking up for the trip. But
stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back after the break. And don't forget, Tom Gresham's Gun Talk is coming up at 11 only on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.
And we're back here on Nevada Backcountry. I wanted to let people know, why don't you guys get on social media there, Facebook, Instagram, and give us a little story. If some of the stuff you've been hearing today, sometimes Henry and I feel like we're the only two chattering about this stuff. We'd like to hear from some of the listeners about some of your experiences. And since it is the season, please send us some pictures of your hunt, being out there with your kids, the wife, you know, whatever, the animal you acquired or just the great mountains that you're hiking around. Just send us some pictures, a little story behind it. We'd love to hear about it and let bring it up on the show about some of our listeners and the awesome adventures that they're having.
Oh, absolutely. And I'd invite people, hey, if you had the hunt of a lifetime or you had something weird and crazy happen in the mountains.
You saw Bigfoot.
You saw Bigfoot. I got a story about the supernatural out there elk hunting one time. We can go into that sometime, but no, you got a good story to share. Hey, be a guest on the show. I love listener feedback. Again, like Dave said, the easiest way to get in touch with us is social media. Send us a message. I love hearing about other people's experiences.
Oh, yeah. It's cool.
Absolutely. So let's jump right back into some of the necessities. We were talking about, you know, loppers and a saw. What are some of the other necessities you have at camp when you're set up?
Oh, I've always got rain gear.
Okay.
I always got rain gear with me.
Driest state in the union, Dave.
Yeah, that doesn't seem to it doesn't seem to follow the pattern come archery, deer season, and elk season.
Those late summer monsoons,
you know? Yeah. You see those black clouds building, and you're like, this is going to be a good day. But other things, I've always got tarps. Other things I always bring to camp, obviously, is plenty of water.
I was going to bring up, this is a toilet.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh.
Okay, so for years, you know, it was like a pickaxe and a slit trench somewhere downwind from camp.
Yeah.
Man, the luggable loo. Dude, it's a toilet seat that fits on you fill a bag with kitty litter. Holy smokes, that's a game changer.
What we've been using for the last upteen years is an old, the toilet seats that like your grandparents may have that like sits elevated above the regular commode.
Right.
Right. The little chair. We bring one of those to camp.
Put a 5-gallon bucket underneath.
Oh, we'll just dig a hole sometimes.
Okay.
And that all started years ago when my good buddy next door missed the ground and ended up in his pants.
Oh,
it was,
no.
I got pictures of it. It was fantastic. It's so funny.
I've heard stories about people like fly fishing, hanging the net off their back, And then dropping waders and the nets back there.
And right in the net.
Yeah. And then they got a hog.
Is that where they got the term brown trout?
It might be. It might be. The Luggable Lou is kind of like that. It's a seat that clips onto a 5-gallon bucket. The clutch thing there is the kitty litter in the bag.
That's a really good. I didn't even think of the kitty litter.
The kitty litter is perfect.
Yeah, definitely the bathroom. Before the shower tents occurred, we'd always use the tarps and stuff and do the shower that way. But the main things, obviously, is a good, secure shelter.
Yes.
Like you were saying, a nice shaded area, maybe within the trees or something, because we do get those winds. And if anyone's in area 212 and you come across a Primos double bull blind, that was probably mine.
Dave would like it back. The wind take it?
Oh, yeah. It was a really nasty, windy evening. And when I went back out to the blind in the morning, the blind was not there.
Oh, no. Were there any trees nearby?
Yeah, there were some trees, but I searched that whole area. I couldn't find that blind. I don't know if it just pinballed through the trees and God knows where it ended up.
Well, I was going to say here's a tip for listeners. Tie the blind to a tree. Run like 50 feet of some sort of heavier than like 550 cord, but some kind of rope and tie that sucker off. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we had it staked down. We had the lines that come with it, you know, to tie it down to the ground and stuff. All of it was gone. It was just.
Oh, okay.
You know, at first I thought someone snaked it, but I'm like, man, there's like nobody out here.
Yeah.
So, just make sure your stuff's secure, but mainly just make sure you're in a good spot. Try to, because this has happened to us before, we set up our wall tent once, and it rained really hard, like really nasty rain, and we just happened to have set the wall tent up where the water
wants to be,
where the water ran down. We found this nice flat spot, and we're like, oh, dude, that'll be sweet. Well, that was where the water pooled.
I mean, it ties everything we've been talking about for the last couple months together. Part of scouting is figuring out a location for base camp.
Yeah.
Getting out there, getting eyes on, seeing, okay, are there a lot of rocks? Am I going to be able to do this? Is this a natural washout, etc.? When you're out deer hunting, let's say, how far from the actual area that you are going to be hunting do you set base camp?
My base camp is generally going to be at least 2 or 3 miles from where we're going to be hunting, if not more. And if I need to, if during the process of the hunt, I'm locating animals a little further out, I'll do a spike camp. I'll just grab my little 1-2 person tent or a tarp that I can hang over for shelter.
Right.
But usually the main camp with all my goods and stuff and the coolers.
A couple miles out?
Yeah, it's a couple miles out. Find a nice, comfortable spot because you know, you're there for 5, 6, 7, 10, 12 days. You're like, well, I want to be able to have a nice place to sit in the shade and what have you. So, you know, and you definitely don't want it like right underneath the aspen stand that you've been seeing all the deer.
That's where I was going with this. Yeah. And see, for me, mostly hunting on foot, hunting out of a backpack, I tend to sleep up on ridges and stuff. I like waking up and sitting there glassing while I eat. But it is nice to set that base camp close enough to where it's not a full day endeavor to get into where you want to hunt.
Right.
But going back there, hitting the reset button, as I get older, I'm noticing more and more, I have a threshold for how many days I want to be roughing it, living out of a backpack.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And having that ability to not have to go all the way home or all the way to a hotel or all the way to the nearest town, but go back to a camper, shower, use not an actual toilet, but some semblance of something to sit on.
Have a nice cold drink.
Yeah, I think that can extend your hunt. And I've never killed a deer from the couch.
No.
So having little comfort items out there close enough to where I'm hunting to where it's like, okay, I can spend a couple hours here, hit the reset button and go in refreshed is absolutely crucial.
Oh, I'm with you 100%. I know a lot of 20-year-olds and early 30-year-olds out there right now are like, ugh.
Yeah,
but we've been there.
We've been there, done that. Part of the process of aging, I'm realizing that energy drinks and beef jerky doesn't fuel me quite like it used to. I used to be able to go for days on a bag of beef jerky.
Beef jerky. Oh,
now it's like, man, if I don't have a salad or so, it's like, oh boy, I don't feel good.
Yeah, a nice meal every couple of days. You're like, and then plus as you get older, you get all gassy and weird.
Absolutely. No, so I mean, there's some stuff. Hey, if you've got better suggestions or, you know, something like Mike Nelson brought up when he brought up that pressure washer thing when he was on the show. Little stuff like that, I learn all the time from people.
That was cool.
I might think, hey, I've got this figured out. I've got my system. Man, he said that, and I went, you know, I'm going to get one of those, and I'm going to leave it. Even if you leave it in the truck, that is a great idea.
Yeah, that's magic. And that's the beauty of being able to hopefully get some other folks to give us their cool little ideas, that their little tricks of the trades.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, there's a wealth of knowledge out there. There's a lot of people. Get in touch, share it. Couple quick plugs for our sponsors, Out West Buildings, Legacy Sports International, and Truck Envy here in Reno. Make sure you guys are as equipped as possible to be successful this season. And like I said earlier, you know, hey, holy smokes, hopefully I've got a deer on the ground at this point. Hopefully you found some sheep.
Yes, hopefully.
Hopefully
found
soon.
Found access in there, so...
Yeah, and thank you guys sincerely, everybody, for listening. If your topic or your suggestion is picked to be on an upcoming episode, we've got a bunch of Sitka Gear hats with the show logo embroidered on them. We'll be giving those away. We also have a wall safe to give away. So don't just listen to the show and think, ah, you know, I'm not going to chime in. We thrive on listener feedback. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in this weekend to Nevada Backcountry. Tom Gresham's Gun Talk is coming up next. Don't go anywhere.
Good luck, everybody.